Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas with For Love of Food at SaveYourLife.com. And I love these kind of stories. Listeners send me this one in BBC, and it combines food and gardening, horticulture, history. Really just a fascinating story. And it's about, it was posted at BBC.com, but relates here to a native plant in the United States, and it's the only plant that has caffeine in it. The only, as they refer to it, the only known native caffeinated plant in North America. And it's a fascinating article about something that it says once called Cassina, with a C, by a native tribe in southern Georgia, northern Florida, dubbed black drink by Spanish explorers. And so this is a holly, actually, which is called yaupon, which they don't go into the origins of the of that word, Y-A-U-P-O-N, which perhaps is a Native American name for it, but they would, according to the article, pick, roast, and boil the leaves, and also I think the roots at some point were also used, and it says in this BBC article from like a week ago. As if orchestrated specifically for the mind and body, yaupon leaves as they're a perfect ratio of stimulating xanthines such as caffeine, theobromine, and theophylline released slowly into the body, providing a jitter-free mental clarity and ease to the stomach. So again, this is a form of holly, and I don't know if anyone has some around here. I got to find out, check with some of my gardening friends. This is, the article goes into some of the history of caffeinated beverages in general, and then talks a little bit about this plant in Native American culture and many of the tribes that used it, including the Creek, Cherokee, Chickasaw, and others. They actually goes back to 1050 AD, and they have found the residual from this holly in Illinois in the Cahokia Mounds. So I love the combination of history, and this drink is making a comeback. There are a couple of producers of it now in the United States, and I've got to go in search of it. So one of them is in Texas. They started selling in farmers markets back in 2016. And there's actually an American Yaupon Association, AYA, that was founded in 2018, supposedly the members of this American Yaupon Association are harvesting, roasting, selling more than 10,000 pounds of it each year, the leaves and the roots. So, and if you've tasted this, if you've heard of it, I would be interested to know. It's Yaupon Brothers is one group, and Cat Spring Yaupon another. So you can probably order it online. I just got this, so I didn't have time to look into that. But it's a really fun story, and again, it's bringing back a drink which was used here in North America and really forgotten, kind of erased along with many of cultural things from the Native Americans, and the caffeinated things from tea and coffee from Asia, other areas became the norm, and the Yaupon just disappeared. And one of the fun stories behind that, I guess, is that Kew Gardens, they gave it, according to this article, controversial scientific name, Ilex, which is the genus for holly, and the species Vomitoria. Because it can be used in that way for inducing you to throw up. One conjecture is that it was given that name to make sure that the Yaupon wasn't a threat to the English tea trade. So lots of history and things behind this, can't wait to try it at some point. And again, let me know if you've heard of it or tried it. I try to follow things like this, I've never even heard the name. Got to check with Niraj at Leaf Tea Bar, see whether he knows about it. I wouldn't be surprised if he did. Perhaps people who are have been studying Native American cultures, perhaps they're aware of it. I really appreciate our listeners sending this, it crosses so many of the topics I'm interested in. As I said, history and plants and horticulture and food and beverages, and I can't believe I haven't heard of it. So again, email me, michael@saverlife.com, if you run into stories like this. This past week, I've been making banana bread. When we get bananas, invariably, one or two bananas start to get spots on them and kind of overripe. And really, I can't eat overripe bananas, just on their own. So we throw them in the freezer and use them to make banana bread or smoothies or things in the future. So it gives us time, but the bananas have been stacking up in our freezer. So this past week I made a triple batch of banana bread. And one of the things, we had all kinds of kind of leftover little bits of flour that were cluttering our cabinet. And so I used a bunch of those in this, and there's a combination of bread flour and white flour and wheat flour and einkorn flour. There's probably eight kinds of flour that went in to these banana breads. And one batch, I used brown sugar instead of cane sugar. In the past, I've used the recipe calls for just cane sugar, the recipe that we use, but in the past I've used a percentage, maybe a third or a half brown sugar. But in this case, I used 100% brown sugar. And then also instead of butter, because we've been at various times on vegan, just eating vegan, we had this organic plant-based sort of butter substitute that Wegmans has been selling, which I tend to avoid these kinds of substitutes. They seem a little too processed. But we had some of this left over, and I haven't been using it, so I figured in one batch I would try it in the banana bread in one of the three batches, and really didn't expect for it to come out very well. You can't substitute things for butter and baking or other substitutions without often causing some problems and needing to refine those kinds of substitutions. So I didn't expect it to go well, but it did. It was a great banana bread. It was more like a molasses flavor. It was darker, a little less banana flavor because the brown sugar kind of overwhelmed the banana flavor. But it was a delicious banana bread. Finished it this morning, actually. And the regular batch that had cane sugar and regular butter in it, that came out beautifully. I mean, these things, these banana bread loaves just looked so gorgeous. And I didn't put any nuts in them. I'll put some nuts in the next batch. But I did go through 9 bananas in the course of these 3 batches of banana bread. So that made a dent in the bananas in the freezer. And banana bread, I also, beyond sort of substituting the cane sugar for one of the batches, I also used about 30% less sugar than the recipe recommended. And so it meant that this was not a very sweet banana bread. It was sweet enough, but not as sweet as the recipe recommended. And I didn't use any salt at all in this. So just something to experiment if you're making things like banana bread. If you cut back on the sugar some, you can always add it back in. If you taste the batter and you think it's not sweet enough, the bananas, give you a lot of sweetness. And the bananas that we were using were these frozen bananas that were extra ripe, and they turned basically black in the freezer. And so I think they provided more sugar than say, some bananas, which were not quite as ripe. And you also didn't need to do much mashing, because once they were defrosted, they'd lost most of their texture. So have some fun experimenting with some baking. And the house smells amazing. And because it's not as sweet, it really feels less like a dessert as a snack, but something moderately healthy, given it does have a fair amount of sugar in it still, but really delicious. I've been eating banana bread like 2 or 3 times a day for the last 3-4 days, because I had a couple of loaves just waiting for me to eat. So if you do some baking and have some comments, send me some photos, michael@saverlife.com. Also saw a post, it was a repost, because I've seen this maybe a year or two ago on Facebook, of someone, not anyone from around here, but someone who does some crazy lattice work on pies for decoration. Just insane decorations on these pies. So look it up. Even if you don't like pies, you'll appreciate the effort someone went to do these works of art. Just phenomenal. And speaking of pies, Herd Orchards has started a pie club, and about every 3 weeks they're bringing in pies for people want to join, and you basically every 3 weeks get a pie, and different pies from Herd Orchards. They bring them into Rochester at a specific time, a meeting place, as they've done in the past, especially this past year for members of their harvest boxes. So even though their farm market is closed during the winter, they are still at work making pies, and you can order them. You can also make an appointment to meet them out there to stock up on some frozen pies for your in your freezer. We've got still have an apple raspberry pie, which is probably going to get baked as soon as I'm done with the banana bread that I was have been baking. It's going to be time to have that apple raspberry, which is a phenomenal combination. I love their apple pie. I love their raspberry pie, but the combination apple raspberry is kind of the best of both worlds. The tartness of the raspberries adds to the apples. Makes a raspberry not quite as intense as the pure raspberry pie. And I love all three of them, but I think the apple raspberry is kind of the sweet spot of those two options, apple and raspberry. So again, Herd Orchards has some special things you can sign up for during this off season, and I was excited to see that they launched a pie club. And of course, it's one pie every 3 weeks, but if you want more, you can order more. They've got and they're all winter long, they're stocking up their freezer with pies, and the crust, the filling, as I've said many times, it just is amazing on these pies. Also, Kate Schlenker at Newbury Park Pastries has been making some savory pies, and her latest one, which is available today, although she opened for the first time Friday hours yesterday, it is possible that she sold out of these Australian pot pies with a puff pastry on top. If you're going just for these, I would call first and have her set one aside. She's open at least until 4 today. I'm just not sure that these Aussie pies are going to last that long. And she describes it as a meat pie. Beef slowly cooked in a gravy of red wine, stock, and seasonings, and topped with a buttery puff pastry lid. The Aussie pie. So I got one yesterday, and going to bake it tonight, and I'll let you know next week what it was like. But Kate's always up to something interesting, and she has her standards. I love the Panang, which is vegetarian, as well as a regular vegetarian pot pie, and shepherd's chicken, etc. Quite a range of pot pies, but often has a special one, and for this weekend, it's Aussie meat pie, but she also is doing a chicken and biscuits pot pie, too, so a couple of specials. Open until 4 today, 11 to 4, and again, if you are going just to get one of these special ones, I would call in advance and have her set one aside. In the Genesee Regional Market, it's Newbury Park Pastries on Mushroom Boulevard, and as I said before, it's very ironic that she is allergic. Kate, the owner, chef, head baker, is allergic to mushrooms, but she's located on Mushroom Boulevard, and some wonderful pot pies. Also doing a number of different desserts, so those are also available. She had, and she said she was making them again this week, some molasses cookies with little bits of crystallized ginger in them, and just a great texture on these molasses cookies. If I see a molasses cookie offered somewhere, I will usually get one, sometimes two. And these are these are some of the best molasses cookies I've had anywhere at Newbury Park Pastries. So if you haven't been there, stop out and visit them. They also have a bunch of local products. When I was just leaving yesterday, picking up the Aussie pie, one of the pasta vendors was dropping off some pasta. So there are some other local goods in her little retail shop on Mushroom Boulevard. So she is open on Fridays now, and not necessarily every single Friday, but I think in general she's going to be open on Fridays from 4 to 7 and Saturdays 11 to 4. And there was a rumor she might have more banana cream pie today. Not sure. She wasn't sure how much she was going to get done last night, so haven't heard whether she has banana cream. I had one a couple weeks ago that was divine, fabulous. If you had some great food, service, etc., email me, michael@saverlife.com. Let me know what you think. Went out this past week, just a couple days ago, to Albion in search of Lorenzo's Tacos. I know it sounds like an Italian place, but it's some great Mexican tacos. And went on Thursday. Unfortunately, they only serve the tacos, and they have a little Mexican grocery store in Albion. They only serve the tacos on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. So if you've heard about these, they're supposed to be amazing. I haven't, again, they weren't open when we were there, but I will go back in the very near future. But did go up the Albion Tower in their cemetery, which is a stunning view of, I think I could see Toronto across Lake Ontario. I'm pretty sure that's what we're looking at. And it's got to be the highest point for many miles in the cemetery in Albion, which is an old cemetery. And it's got some great hills and old headstones. And this is up at the top of the hill where they have this tower, which has a spiral staircase that is, at various points, very dark. You might want to bring a flashlight or use the flashlight on your phone because it's very dark. And it's a little tricky to go up there, but it was a pretty sturdy staircase. It's just a very narrow spiral staircase. And the view at the top is well worth it. So even though Lorenzo's wasn't open, it was a lot of fun to see this tower in the cemetery in Albion. And it's the old cemetery is kind of on the east side of Albion, the Rochester side. And you should go in and explore there a little bit. It's Chris Clemens from Exploring Upstate said told me about it and suggested it. Said it was kind of the era of Mount Hope Cemetery. Yeah, quite as old, but that idea, and some beautiful buildings, really a gorgeous cemetery with huge trees, really massive sugar maples and other trees in that cemetery. So we went out on an adventure. We'll talk about it more in the next hour and discover the Finger Lakes. Chris and I have done a few road trips where we take separate cars and just leave our phones on while we're driving. So it's kind of like we're talking like he's right there in the car with me, except that we are socially distant and different separate cars. We can talk about what we're seeing, where we're going, politics. I mean, it's just, again, it's like going on a car trip with someone, except they're not right in the same car with you. So we went out to Albion and Medina on Thursday, and we'll talk about it more in the next hour. We'll be back with Discover the Finger Lakes, and then tomorrow, The Grapevine. Michael Warren Thomas here at SaverLife.com. Have a great day.